Hello, my name is Scott. You're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature, where I'm here talking all things high school English, how to make your life easier, more enjoyable, how to put that pep in your step, if you will, and try to keep life as sane as possible in our classrooms. If you want to know more about me, my website's theteachersworkshop.com. I offer online professional development for high school English teachers. And actually now, this is why I took a little bit of a break here for a couple of weeks, because I created a course for all teachers. And so in the course, you can download various resources and basically see what I do in my course, try to figure out ways where you can apply it to your course. And this is true for, you know, even with English teachers. Obviously, there's poetry and short stories, and I'm going to talk about the research paper. So there's a lot of things that I do in my class that are directly relatable to any, you know, to any English class. But I tried to basically make the second course that I offer, you know, tailored to basically anybody that's just sort of plug in different things, whatever it is that you're teaching, whatever topic it is you're teaching. Got to just talk about my different styles and the way I do things and my logic behind what I do. And so that's called success support and satisfaction for all students is what I called it. And I framed it so that to make it a little enjoyable, I tried to frame it where the main question is how can we treat our students like athletes? We bring that kind of competitive spirit and that real sort of uplifting tone that coaches use. And I got basically compared everything that we do in education with kind of what with coaches do. And it's like, you know, if we want to make champions in our classrooms and have a classroom, you know, this exciting place where kids want to go, just like a sports field, you know, how can we do that? And so that's basically the course I just created. So this week we're talking about the research paper. And so this is, you know, it's end of March. You know, we got April, May, a lot of schools are kind of out early, but we got a little bit of June. So it's that sort of crunch time before I like to do, especially the seniors, I like to do creative projects, really focus on creative projects and do more fun, light novels towards the end of the year for obvious reasons. But yeah, not that they're not meaningful. I actually pick some of the more sort of meaningful novels that I like to kind of send them off into the world with. We're doing Exit West, for instance, is our last text this year. So this is kind of that little bit of a bump before the fourth quarter comes around, where I can still squeeze in some heavy academic work right before they go to college. You know, if they are going to college, that will be useful in college. But it's obviously an important skill to be able to take multiple sources and make sense of them, maybe more important if you don't go to college, or at least equally as important if you go to college, to be able to take and find credible sources. That's a lot long part of the conversation that I've been having last week with my students, is like, they're just asking me, is this a good source? And so I try to think about and talk about like what makes a good source, what does peer reviewed mean, that sort of thing. You know, what can you find on a website, and what can you find in, say, a more scholarly kind of research-based article? And what are you going to sort of find in that database of art that our school offers, you know, that your school, I'm sure, pays for something that students can access that's a little more high quality? And, you know, and also use other sources other than those as well. You know, the New York Times, the Atlantic, of course, there's many journals out there that have longer articles about topics. And so just sort of talking about, you know, what articles will help you understand the novel better. Of course, a regular synthesis essay doesn't need to necessarily just be based on a novel, but I always like to have the novel as the sort of foundation for, just because it's longer and more complicated and complex, has a lot more things to talk about, right? You know, if you talk about a novel for 3 or 4 weeks and they gather tons of evidence, this is going to make the writing of the essay easier, because they just have so much evidence to go on. If you're just doing a couple of articles, you're really sort of stretching for things to say, and you end up sort of being very close to what the article is saying. Really with a novel, you just have a lot of different ideas that you can bring in. There's only a sort of limited number of ideas in any single article, right? So that's why I sort of focus on the novel usually when it comes to a research paper. And, you know, this is the one opportunity at the end of the year where they can think about literary criticism and just sort of, we're doing it with Beloved right now, with Toni Morrison. And it's just, I told them, I said, I spent maybe just as much time reading literary criticism on Beloved as I did the novel itself, because I just was so fascinated with all the different ideas that people had about the novel, and just sort of reading about the different passages. I just had so many different sort of questions or curiosities. I think it's sort of true. This is the second year I'm teaching the novel. Anytime you start to teach a novel for the first time, you just have so many different questions. And I feel like I'm starting to get some answers, but maybe in 10 years from now, I'll have all of them. And I felt like that when I first started teaching Hamlet or something, right? It's like, oh, this is like, how do I even begin with this? Because there's so much figurative language, just layer upon layer. Almost every line, there's some kind of metaphor, personification going on. And then 10 years later, like, okay, I'm pretty sure I understand every line of this play. And actually, I remember walking by the hallway, hearing somebody recite a line of a play, and I kind of, you know, did a little listening, like, yeah, that's Hamlet. And it was only like a couple of lines of the play. Because I was like, wait, I know that. Oh, yeah. So at some point, maybe I'll memorize Beloved like I did Hamlet. But yeah, I think it's just a really important skill, especially with the internet being this thing that's getting larger and larger as time goes on, to try to, I mean, yeah, I even tell, I always like to tell the stories of what research looked like when I was in school, and you actually sometimes would have to bounce between different libraries to find really good resources. And what was considered electronic back in my day was kind of comical, but now you plug something in and, you know, 15,000 articles, you know, appear before you, and you can filter them, and, you know, so you almost have too much to go on, and so you have to sort of, that's a different kind of skill you have to teach. But my big thing this year, especially because there's so many sort of gaps last year, is to do it all in class. And so that was a long introduction. The title of this is The Research Paper Made Easy, 8 Steps of the Writing Process. And so my focus is to keep those 8 steps, to do basically everything in class. It helps. There's a lot of different reasons why I at least this year, but in general, I try to keep things in class, because you can walk them through the process. You think about when they go home to complete an essay, there's a couple different situations that could happen. Either they get help from their from their college-educated parents, or maybe college-educated siblings, right? If they're at home on break or something like that. Or just older sibling in general, right? If you're teaching freshmen or sophomores, that will really help. And I remember getting help from my sisters on different things. So what do you think? Or even their friends, right? They can call their, and some of that's okay, and some of that's good. You know, in college, I remember sitting down and just having conversations. You know, I would have my notes in front of me. Somebody else would have their notes in front of them. And we just kind of have conversations about the notes that we took, try to make sense of things. And that's good. And a lot of that happens in class too. But obviously, you know, they have somewhat of an advantage, right? We still want to give them advantages. An advantage is, hey, I'm going to call somebody in my class who's really, really smart and get their take on this novel and ask them what they're writing about. And again, some of that's okay, but it just, again, at what point does it not become their idea? And if they're in your class, you can help them navigate. You can have those conversations with them. You're the teacher. So everybody sort of benefits from having the conversation with the teacher. So there's no advantage. Anybody can approach me in conference with me about their idea and their source and how they're going to, you know, structure it or organize it and all that stuff. I can sort of walk them through the process with the idea that they can eventually do all of this stuff on their own without the teacher's assistance, right? We want to make sure that they can do it independently. That's why I'm there, just to make sure that they can do that. They also have the internet at home, right? But again, when I'm there in class, I can see that they're reading their articles, and if they have questions about different, oh, can I do this, or do you think this is a good thing to do? I can answer those questions, as opposed to them just, you know, being tempted to plagiarize or something like that. Or they might not have any supports at all at home, right? They don't have the internet, they don't have their classmates to call, or they don't go on the internet because they choose not to, which is fine. Right, or they don't have college-educated parents, right? they don't have all these extra sources, extra resources to help guide them. They also have a lot of things going on. I've gotten these emails already, you know, that there's a play recently that a lot of kids were preparing for, sports. They might have some big project in chemistry or another major test, say, in their history class, where they're sort of, oh, I got to finish this essay up, but I got another test. So you just avoid all of that. You know, if they, and actually I got this email too, that they were traveling with family for a family trip over the weekend, right? So, you know, that's just all stuff that they have lives. And so it's ideal for them to learn the writing process in our class. You know, in addition to them being sick, I mean, this is another reason I haven't made a podcast in a while, is because the stomach bug going through my family. But think about that. They either could have, you know, just got sick. Maybe their siblings were sick. You know, so the house was kind of crazy. They could be recovering from an illness or face distractions from television. Right? Think about it. Some kids have the television going. Somebody's watching TV all the time in their house, or their siblings are just in their face and you know, getting in their way, that sort of thing. And one thing, if they're writing the essay at home, then they can't ask me questions, right? That's if they get writer's block, they don't have somebody to go to. So they have their classmates, but they also have me. And any time I can redirect them to a better source, help them organize their ideas, or give feedback on writing. And in a simple way, what I'm describing is I get to teach them how to write. You know, 'cause so much of what we do is the preparation for writing, right? We help them do classwork and different activities to help understand a novel, and then we just ask them to write. And usually for me, that's in class. But a research paper is like, okay, I taught you, you learned from your classmates, but now do some reading. Now do some independent reading. I let them pick the topic that they're gonna write on. So their thesis statement is something that they pick, you know, on their own. And then the source is something that they can find on their own too. So I don't say, oh, you have to read this. So I give them a whole week to write this essay in class, because I want to know before they graduate that they can handle something larger like this. And to show them that, you know, when you think about a week in class, it's not that many hours. When you think about in college when you wrote essays, how many hours did it take to write an essay? And you want to sort of show them, you know, say a class is 45 minutes, that's an hour and a half, so maybe it's 3 hours total that I'm giving them in class over the course of a week, or maybe more. But the objective is to show them that it can be done in you know, really that's like two sittings, right? That's like an hour and a half, you know, or even say it's 4 hours even. That's an hour and a half or 2 hours. If you do that twice, you should be done an essay. And that, how many times you have to write an essay in every semester. So you're teaching them time management. You know, don't get distracted. Just focus. You know, when I'm in class, I can see that they're not on their phones. You know, I can sort of bring them back in if they are, just to show them, like, it doesn't take that long if you're not watching television, if you're not engaged in conversation with other people, if you're not eating, you know, if you're not on your phone, obviously. So that's all, right, all things we want to teach them. A student can overcome writer's block and start the essay by answering my simple question. Usually that's all I really answer them. I was just, you know, the other day I just walked around the class the entire period. I just walked around and said, so what are you going to write about? And that's it. So I said, what are you going to write about? And so it's interesting, right? 'Cause in these situations, you can see them, visually see them going inside their own head, bouncing around their consciousness, trying to make sense of their notes, their conversations, and all the quotes we covered in class. Many students will start with a topic, gather quotes, and then come up with a thesis after looking over everything. Once they explain where they want to go, I can ask questions and suggest passages that might give them more ideas. But that's the conversation is so important because, you know, as I was walking around, I met them at that stage in writing where they were just gathering quotes, and then a lot of them hadn't gotten to their thesis yet. And so that's why a lot of them came back and I said, hey, so what are you writing about? And then they were able to kind of think about all the different things all the ideas that were going through their head and then, you know, present it to me in this logical way. And it's like, okay, so they're like, what you just said is your thesis statement, right? So now that work is done, right? So you're just showing them like how they can make life easier for themselves by preparing. And that's the big part, is the preparation process. So that's why I'm going through these 8 steps. So the first step is to take notes on the novel or main text. this is huge, right? This is a 3 or 4 week process where you know, in some activities they're working independently, in some activities they're working with a group, but they basically interpret as many quotes and passages as possible. Some of those passages are really long, and we spend a day, maybe a day, on one passage. And some days we'll go through 4 or 5 or 6, or sometimes 10. You know, if they're working independently, they can get through, say, 10 quotes in one day. But as a whole, you're talking about 30 to 50 quotes for a whole unit. So think about that. And actually, I remember in high school, we had to write down a quote. When I did my research paper, we wrote down one quote on one index card, and we had to have 100 index cards in this big folder. And so then we had to sort of juggle around those cards and make sense of, like, oh, I'm not going to use that one, but I will use this one. But that was it was almost symbolic. Like, you got to have at least 50 quotes before you sit down to write, or else you're going to be scrambling for things to say when you write, and it's going to take a really long time. The writing process should not take long, because you've already had ideas, or you've already interpreted various quotes from the main novel. And so you have tons of support. You almost have too much to go on. And then it's just a matter of how fast can you type, basically. And my students also take notes on the novel before we study it in class, so they can use those notes to help them write the essay. And that's, at that point, the essay just writes itself. All right, so then the next step is to conduct independent research. So like I said, we just finished Beloved. So there's tons of resources, including history, literary criticism, that help students understand the text on a deeper level. Many of my students will also use just any kind of article that you can find online, like trauma. A lot of them have been talking about trauma. Memory, motherhood is a big, big thing that a lot of my students are interested in with that novel, and that they found on their own, or, like I mentioned before, in your school's library databases. Sometimes I like to have students read the same article, but it's important to, I think last year I gave them three articles that were really sort of high quality, great articles. But this year I just said, you know what, go find your own, because that's an important skill. All right, the third thing, number three, is read and take notes on the article. So after they find their article, and you want to have time in class for each of these sort of steps, you want to have them take notes on it. So it's not easy to read somebody else's interpretation of a text and then come up with a newer, better interpretation that exposes a flaw in the argument or fills in some unexamined gap. So I tell students to write down quotes, then think about them for a little while, sort of pause, think independently, and then write down their own ideas about the text. Because sometimes what will happen is they'll just write down something somebody else said about the book, and then when they write about it in their essay, it just sounds similar. It sounds recycled. So that's where you want to give them a second to kind of encourage them to think about it for a second and then write their own understanding of what's going on. I also allow them to choose sources related to their main topic instead of the novel. Like I just mentioned a couple. Like racism is another one. Obviously, it's a big one, to extend or enhance their understanding of the novel. Number four is generate a list of quotes and evidence. So before coming up with a thesis, smart to start with a list of quotes that a student plans to interpret in the essay. And so I kind of mentioned this before, that I had 100 quotes from, it was Wuthering Heights. And so that's the value of 100 quotes. I guess my suggestion is like at least 50, because it's not even, I have something to say about these, you know, whatever, however many you pick in the end, say it's 10 or 15 or 20. I don't know how many go into an essay. So you have three in each body paragraph. So even as little as maybe 9. But it's not about those 9, right? It's about understanding the whole novel. So that was the symbolic gesture of the 100 index cards, is like, you should understand as much as possible about this whole thing, not just these 9 quotes. Right. So that's why it's important. That's how I try to explain it to my kids too. So five is to create an outline with ideas. So once you have your quotes, then you organize them And there's actually a couple of online sources that will allow you to do this. But, you know, I like pen and paper myself, but, you know, obviously any kind of Word document will pretty easy to copy, you know, cut and paste quotes into different locations. But an outline helps. This is another, everything is basically, these are all tools to avoid writer's block. They organize the topics of their body paragraphs, and they now have a structure of the house they will build, right? And they just need to decorate the inside of the house, so to speak, once they start writing. If their class and reading notes contain interpretation of quotes, they've already done the informal thinking required before putting it all together. The number six is, of course, just write the essay. So that's this should be, hopefully be the easiest part. I mean, that sounds crazy, right? Because that's the main thing that you're asking them to do is write the essay. But with all these pre-writing activities, writing the essay should be easy and stress-free. That's the objective, is to make it a stress-free process. It should also not be time-consuming, as students have already done the necessary legwork. So number seven is revise the essay. I think this depends on your students. I was never, because I obviously you can see that when I was a writer, I prepared so much that I feel like I didn't have that much to revise other than just, spelling or some kind of grammatical thing, you know, that you want to tweak, or, oh, I should combine these sentences, that sort of thing. You could take a ton of time revising before you finalize it, you know, but that's, you know, again, you want to try to make all these steps not take that much time. And I don't think revision is that, you know, time consuming if you've, again, thought about what you want to write about before you write it. So yeah, like even just typos and different little things, you know, maybe rearrange the order of a body paragraph. And then that's the opportunity where they can review the rubric perhaps that you give for the assignment to make sure the essay meets all the expectations. And then the final and last kind of, I remember back in our day, it was not a fun thing to create a works cited page. But the title page was fun. So that's the two last things, the title page and the works cited page. Title page is where you can give it this kind of creative title, you know, that has your thesis in it a little bit. And then the works cited page, easybib.com is this great. You just kind of plug in your information there and it'll give you a MLA citation, makes it super easy. So you don't have to, again, you just don't have to take any time on this. I remember, you know, taking forever to find the different things they wanted and make it correct. So that's a really good resource. Titles at this point should be easy and fun to create and to include, of course, all the basic necessary things. If anybody picks this up at some point, even if you want to use the essay later for some prerequisite or something, you should have like the date, the period, the name of the teacher, the school, and the course all on the title page, just so you could be able to identify all of it. Yeah, this is a WeeWare. I don't really, you know, I do kind of feel guilty because I feel like I'm not leading a discussion. I'm not lecturing. You know, they're the ones that are working hard. And, you know, they even towards the end of last week, they said, oh, can we have another day? And I was like, of course you can have another day. You know, I don't want people to either not hand this in or hand it in late. So you give them, and yeah, I usually try to set a date kind of early, and then I'll extend it just to give them more time. And then after that, you know, somebody says, oh, this, that, and the other thing came up. It's like, okay, sure. I want good work. That's the objective. So we'll do an assignment like this. The deadline's important, but it's not the most important. The most important thing is to have a good quality essay and to make sure they can complete this task, to not have kids just give up on it and think like, this is too impossible. It's too hard. It's going to take too long. Research paper, you know, and they get distracted by a million things at home and they just don't do it. So you want to really be there with them, walk them through it. But that's, you know, for the most part all week, I just walked around the room, made sure everybody was good, you know, kind of looked at what they were doing, kept them on task. But it was a quiet week, you know, it was a quiet week where they were thinking hard, working hard the whole week, and I didn't do much. And that's always great to give ourselves a time to lesson plan and sort of catch up on different things that we need to do, get to know our kids just by talking to them casually. Conferencing with them is not always fun, you know, not always easy to find time to conference, so it's a great time to conference. So yeah, they learn it, and they, you know, not only do they learn how to write, but they've learned how to find quality sources. They learn about time management, and they also learn that the process of meaning making can be fun and easy if they take it one step at a time. All right, thanks for listening. If you like listening, please give me a review wherever you get your podcasts, and I'll see you next week.